AJ. Okay, fine. Guys, so yesterday we did the Gemara that I had put here in two. I didn't take it off for you, but the Gemara on Kuf Lamed Amud Aleph, Kuf Lamed Bet, Amud Bet to Kuf Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, where the Gemara, right, explicitly had told us. First of all, the Gemara said we don't learn from the, we don't derive halacha from the Gemara, which the Rashbam then had to jump in and say, no, by Gemara we don't mean Gemara, we mean not Gemara, right? We mean diyunim that are not meant to be halacha l'maaseh, but the Bavli is indeed, and obviously we follow the Bavli forever. Now that's problematic enough. The bigger problem was the next line in the Gemara, which had said that after somebody dies, so, right, during somebody's lifetime, if you disagree with their psak, so what should you do? Go back to them and say, what were you thinking? If they realize that they made a mistake, then they will do the responsible thing and retract. And if they didn't make a mistake, right, and they can correct themselves, then fine, right? Good rabbis do. Look, today is Mori Varabi's sixth yard site, or Varan's sixth yard site, and, you know, one of the things that made him that impressive was, yes, he could admit a mistake. It was hard to catch him, admittedly. It's very hard to catch people who know everything you will ever know, times a thousand, in every field of life, you know, but that was routinely the case. But it did happen. I have this fond memory, I don't know what you want to call it, where my, I very rarely actually spoke up in shir. It was a bit of a scary thing to do sometimes. But I remember once I asked him, we were doing the sugya of Yeyush and Hefker, and I asked him, doesn't this svara that you just said from the Griz, this is actually as far as it went, contradict the Yerushalmi in the seventh parak of Sanhedrin Halacha Yud? That was as far as I got, right? At which point he saw where I was going with the question, right? And said, no, lo, the bechlal lo kashur, ayin b'shitat beit shamai b'tzmura. That was the entirety of the conversation, which, you know, was like, you know, we were all a bit thrown because he figured out what my question was based on just a reference in the Yerushalmi, right, and then responded with a shita without explaining what the shita was. It took me 6 months to figure out what he had said to me, right, when I was, because then I realized, eventually I figured out he didn't mean Beit Shammai in Tzmura, he meant Beit Shammai in Nazir, regarding a shita of his in Tzmura, which in fact was a retort to my question, and then took me another like month to figure out the response based on a different Yerushalmi. And then a year later, when I happened to be back in yeshiva, because I was in YU at the time, so when I went back to visit yeshiva, I went over to him and he said, I don't know if you remember a year and a half ago where this is what you said, but I actually think I could defend myself based on a different Yerushalmi, right, which he was Moda, which I thought was one of the great victories of my life, that I could pull that off. But yeah, he would do it. It just, you know, it was very hard to catch him. And even then, it wasn't a mistake. It was just, you know. But the Gemara then says, if someone has died, so what should you do? Don't accept his position, and don't reject it. Don't accept it because you can't accept something that might be wrong, but don't just throw it out because maybe he could have defended himself, but you can't postulate like it. The problem is, of course, yeah. Meaning, like, don't, like, yeah, I don't know, throw it up. Literally, rip it up. Tikruhu. Meaning, look, you can't lemaisa paskin based on it because it could be wrong. Right? But that doesn't mean you, like, throw it in the garbage. Right? Meaning, look, it's very simple, right? It could be like, it would be very simple. It would be like this. If I have a sheet of Ramosha Feinstein aniach that I don't understand, I can't fathom how it could be correct, right? Because I have a bomb kash on it, okay? To use the sheepish language, right? Whatever, right? I have no idea. It could be, for all I know. Maybe, is it? I don't know. Is it bi? I don't know if it's like English yeshivish or like if there's like a Yiddish word bum that I don't know. It's possible. I'm not, my Yiddish isn't that good. Slash basically non-existent. I don't know. I'll ask my mother. I don't know. But if I'm giving a halacha shir and Ramosha said something about that issue, it'd be a bit irresponsible of me to not quote Ramosha, right? But I could quote him and say, look, I don't understand Ramosha, so I wouldn't rely on it, but maybe someone else has an explanation, right? Rather than basically, you know, out of sight, out of mind, right? Forget about it, never talk about it again. I assume something like that. Now, what the problem with this whole Gemara, though, is that... Is that what? Yeah, exactly. That is not, as the Rashbam already knows, how we treat the Bavli. The Bavli, as we all know, is the text to which we are constantly answerable. If someone says, there's a Gemara against you, that's basically either you have to explain yourself or you're wrong. Right? And we all know, we spend all our time trying to understand what does the Gemara mean, meaning this is the text to which we are answerable. The question is, why? To make the question worse, this is a Rambam I've talked about. Definitely, well, some of you were here, I don't know if all of you were here, I don't know if it was this year, last year, who knows, I think it was last year. The Rambam in the beginning of Mamrim tells you the following two things, right? The Rambam in Halacha Aleph, in Perek Bet of Hilchot Mamrim, what does he say? Someone tell me, this is the first source, where there's a tab that's, you know, there's an indent, that's the halacha bet. The halacha aleph, the Rambam says.
Oh, if you have a judge who, if you have a judgment that rules according to their age, and then the next time that you go, and says, no, it's not according to our age, take the rule.
Very good, right? The Rambam says, if you're dealing with a d'oraita, right, the interpretation of the Torah itself. So if Sanhedrin A rules in it that it's usher, they interpret it that it's usher, right? So let's imagine that, Ramosha Feinstein was the head of the Sanhedrin, Nineah, there was a Sanhedrin 50 years ago, right? Plausibly, he would have been the head of Sanhedrin. Fine. And he interpreted the Torah to mean that it is usur. Fine. In 10 more years, Naniach, Yaakov rises to his calling life as the head of the Sanhedrin Hagadol Yoshev Yerushalayim. We can dream. Whatever. And Yaakov interprets the Torah that it's mutter. So what does the Rambam say? Is Yaakov allowed to do that? May I go? 100% he can do it. However, halacha bet, what does the Rambam say? Oh, very good.
For example, you would do, electricity is
usher on Shabbos. Yes, fine. They would make a gzeira that electricity is usher on Shabbos, even if they didn't interpret it that way. Fine. But if we want Ramosha himself wanted there to be a takana against timers on Shabbos. Okay, so let's take Ramosha. Ramosha made a derabanan that timers are usher on Shabbos. Yes, Ramosha wanted to. No, he did not win that fight. Right? But he has several tshuva where he just hates, he just rips on timers. And he's like, I wish there was a gzeira, there should be a gzeira. Okay, so he got his way, and there was a gzeira on timers. And now Rami wants to say, no, I don't like the gzeira on timers. Too bad. Unless Rami and his Sanhedrin are greater than Ramosha's best in Bechachma v'minyan. They're both greater in number and size, however we define that, right? In wisdom and size, rather, right? Rami's like, definitely Rami, yes.
Can we say that,
so everyone tries to figure out what does it mean, Gadol Mechachma v'minyan. Do you think you have a greater IQ or knowledge of Torah than Ramosha? I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe Rami. I don't know. I didn't never tested his IQ, and maybe Ma'oz Chamishim Shana, you'll know as much Torah as Ramosha. I'm going to guess at this point in your life you don't know more than he did at the end of his life. Just a guess. Not that you're not wonderful, Rami, but you know. Yeah, so that's what everyone tries to figure out.
It's
These terms are impossible to figure out. What does Chachma mean? What does Minyan mean? Considering all Sanhedrins should have the same number of people, right? This creates a lot of complexity, right? So they try to figure it out. Maybe it means the number of rabbis who relate to the Beit Din as their right Rebbeim. Maybe it's right. Maybe Minyan doesn't mean number of people. It means the age of the Rosh HaBeis Din. I mean, all types of complicated things. And what does Chachma mean? We're going to have to bracket that. But the Rambam says that when it comes to Oraita, a Beis Din, even a lesser Beis Din, can reinterpret the Torah in a different way than the previous Beis Din, right? When it comes to Dirabanan, the Takanot, they cannot unless they fit this magic requirement of Gadol Mimenu B'Chochmah V'Minyan, greater in wisdom and number, whatever that means. Okay? Now, someone please explain to me the logic of what the Rambam just said. Why is it that you have a more latitude, right? This is like counterintuitive at first glance. You have more latitude in the reinterpretation of biblical law than you do in the overturning of rabbinic law, right? Normally we think the opposite, right? Normally, but why?
You're not overturning the biblical law, you're overturning the drush at one point.
Therefore,
it's biblical law that should be directed.
Okay, so still, which is normally of a higher status? Biblical law through the lens of the rabbis, or straight up rabbinic law?
Right.
Okay, good. So keep pushing, Ellie. Good. Now let's spell it out. Let's think. What's the difference in halach and halach bet? For a long time, I didn't, you know, it's obvious to me after years of thinking about it what the answer is, though I recently found, right, Brody pointed in my direction, some Levin something? Oh, I have to look. A rabbi I had never heard of who was like some Rosh Kollel in Cleveland in the middle of the 20th century, who I was like, who is this person? And then I looked at Hebrew book, and he has like, just in Hebrew books, like 30 svarim, including like 150, 200 page sefer just on Hilchot Mamrim in the Rambam. So like, okay, he's apparently a very big Talmud Chacham who I'd never heard of, but fine, who basically says what I said. So good, Ellie, tell me. Why? What's the difference? Why does it seem like, according to the Rambam, that when it comes to biblical interpretation, you have more latitude than you do with straight-up rabbinic law? Okay, so Ellie wants to say maybe it's just about simplicity, meaning rabbinic law, we said it, black and white, this is what we said. If you want to overturn it, you've got to, right? You need the qualifications of Gadlamin and B'chokhmah V'minyan. But, you know, biblical interpretation, to begin with, it's a bit more complicated, complex, and therefore maybe, I don't know what the next words are for you. Therefore, because it's inherently more complicated, so it's more ripe for reinterpretation or something like that? Okay, fine. Yeah, Yaakov.
Everyone has their own
Okay, so you're saying similarly, maybe biblical law is meant to be vague and be multivalent, and therefore,
but
rabbinic law is not meant to be multivalent. It's meant, well, right? So you're saying similar to Ellie.
It can be multivalent because these people just went and they had their svara when they were.
Okay, good. So Yaakov gives a slightly different thing, which is, look, God can be multivalent in a way that people can't be. Okay. Any other? Yes, Rob.
Okay. I would say, I agree,
I won't accuse you of Fira, no matter what you say, okay? I will put it in the realm of a possibility, okay? So.
Are ultimately
what?
Human.
Yeah, they are human.
And so you don't have to speculate like, oh, maybe the rabbi said there's
a
reason.
Okay, so you're saying similar to Ellie and to Yaakov, which is rabbis, what they said is what they meant, right? So if you want to override it, you're just overriding what they meant. God might have meant multiple things, or, you know, God is inscrutable. So, yeah. You know, you might not have, I don't know what the verb of inscrutable, the opposite verb of inscrutable is. What? Yeah, but that's not the verb. The opposite of inscrutable is probably scrutable, but is there a verb?
Scrutinize.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, you were able to scrutinize. There you go. That is the word. Right? But not quite. This doesn't... Not right. No, I don't think so. Yeah. Okay, good. What else? You're all going on clarity / multivalence versus simple meaning. What else might be going on here? Because it's still a little bit odd. Nate, our guest. Alumnus and guest. What do you want to say, Nate?
Maybe park on what else is saying. You say that the
clear-cut law. Okay, so you're also saying it's not clear-cut. Okay, good. Gavi? Gavi, you want to give a different formulation? Ezra, different formulation? You're all having variations on the theme.
Basically, yeah.
Okay, you all want to go. Okay, so let me suggest mine. You tell me what you think, okay? What? Okay. So, I think the Rambam goes as follows. This is how I read the Rambam. When it comes to biblical interpretation, the key here is interpretation. You are answerable to, to God, meaning to the text, or he who wrote the text, that you are interpreting. Meaning, when they're dealing with their biblical law, the rabbis are, by definition, secondary sources, right? They are interpreters of the primary source, but they are answerable to it, right? They're answerable to the primary source, to the Torah, to God. Therefore, when a second Beis Din comes, what are they really doing? Right? They're both answerable to God. All they're doing is, they're not challenging the rabbis. They are basically saying, we are also answerable to God, and we don't think that's what God meant. Right? As opposed to when the rabbis decree something, are they primary or secondary sources? Primary. Right? Because they are the ones who created the law. So let me give you the American example, and then let me finish, right, explaining it, okay? I've used this mashal several times this year in various contexts, but why is it that to overturn a Supreme Court precedent, all you need is a new Supreme Court ruling, but to make an amendment to the Constitution, you need a two-thirds majority of Congress and a three-quarters majority of the state? Because to change law, right, to change the text itself, the law itself, requires a lot, right? We, on purpose, put tremendous hurdles. We don't make it impossible, but we put tremendous hurdles in the path of anyone who wants to change the corpus of law itself, right? So, even if I would be my guest...
No,
think about it. Let me spell it out. When you're dealing with rabbinic law, by definition, the law they've now passed is the corpus of law. It's an amendment to the Constitution, as it were, right? In order to override it, it's not impossible, but what do you need to do? Right, think about the 18th and 20th Amendments. 18th and 20th, isn't it? Am I wrong? Prohibition and unprohibition? Yeah. No? Right?
Sure.
Isn't it 18th and 20th? Am I wrong? Whatever it was, right? Right? For all of our rarefied Constitution, there are two amendments in there about alcohol, right? One prohibiting it and one undoing it, right? 21st, thank you. Close enough. For someone who doesn't live in the country anymore, not bad. Okay, fine. As opposed to Roe v. Wade, that all it will take to overturn Roe v. Wade is a Supreme Court to say, to take the case up and overturn it. Will they, won't they? I know. I also heard all the arguments over at the last Supreme Court hearing. Is it super precedent? Is it not super precedent? I don't want to get into the lumpness, okay? Fine. I don't... What? Oh, fine, I don't care. This is not about Roe v. Wade. It's an example, man. Right? Okay? I can pick something else, okay? Theoretically, you could overturn Madison versus Monroe, but you won't, okay? Yeah, but you won't because it's super precedent. Yeah, we got it. Fine. But, that was the question they asked in the Supreme Court hearing. Go watch it. Fine, super precedent. Super precedent is an idea used by legal theorists of Supreme Court rulings, which technically are interpretation rather than, you know, part of the Constitution, but have gone so long without being challenged by anybody that several legal theorists think that for all practical purposes, the Supreme Court can't overturn it through interpretation because it is beyond regular Supreme Court rulings, right? Basically part of, right, Coney Barrett, I got it right the first time, right? One of her, right, claims was that Roe v. Wade by definition is not super precedent simply because everyone keeps fighting about it, which means that if people are fighting about it, it's precedent, it's not super precedent. Super precedent is something where, like, every Supreme Court justice, it's like no one's ever bothered arguing because it's so obviously, right, and then it becomes integrated into the law somehow. Anyways, so the way I read the Rambam, one second, Ezra, the way I read the Rambam is as follows. Ironically, when it comes to rabbinic law, because the rabbis are writing law, the process of overturning it would be the process of changing the law itself, which always demands more than interpretation, because in interpretation, you are by definition secondary, and you are answerable to the text, right? All you need to do, therefore, to overturn it is to show or to argue that you have a better reading of the text to which you are all answerable, okay? That's how I read the Rambam. Now, but this furthers the question that we've been dealing with, which is, okay, great. If the Rambam is right, then in theory, you can't, let's say, get rid of the rabbinic decree against not having medicine on Shabbos. Okay? But it would, in theory, Yaakov's Sanhedrin HaGadol, right? Does anyone want to be his second? Rami. Fine. Right? Rami and Yaakov's Sanhedrin, right? Sanhedrin HaGadol Yerushalayim. They couldn't tell you unless they were... Yaakov and Rami don't claim to be greater than, let's say, Hillel and Shammai. And therefore, they won't overturn their decrees. They will still prohibit medicine and Shabbos. They'll just do minor things, like...
Moving on the path of Yom Kippur to the path.
Right, they'll claim that there is no... Right, well, that's a plastic, but they will claim that there is no prohibition, but they'll just change minor deraisas, like, they will claim that, in fact, there is no issue against milk and meat, it's only a goat in its mother's milk. Minor little things, right? That they'll just get rid of, because it's just interpretation, right? Or little things. They will say, you know what, we think the Rashbam was right, and halachic day really starts in the morning, not at night, so from now on, Shabbos starts at sunrise on Saturday morning and ends at sunrise on Sunday morning, you know? No big deal, right? Yeah. Medicine on Shabbos, we can't change. But those minor little details of the Torah, right, they can change. Now, how many of you think we can do that? No, but nobody thinks that you can do that, right? But the question is, why not? Why is it that basically anything that the Bavli says, right, we say... And yet the Rambam tells you explicitly that by biblical law, you don't even need to claim to be greater in number or wisdom, right? This furthers our question that we dealt with yesterday, which is, if this is the halacha on the books, right? This is the halacha on the books, in the Gemara itself, in the Rambam, it's not like anyone argues on this. That's not true. Some people do argue on the Rambam, but fine. I don't want to get into that now. So why is this not how we treat the Bavli? No one argues in the Bavli. Rahman al Sani, we have Kofir, Shaykhiz, whatever word we can come up with, right? You know, Apikoires, Min, right? Right? Come up with whatever, you know. And therefore what?
Therefore you know exactly why it came to
conclusion. Fine, I'll make it easier. I'll just pass him like Shammai. He also gave reasons. Very easy.
Are you really like not allowed to say that? I mean, you're allowed to say that you...
No, we don't do that. Yaakov and Rami, I'm not actually saying you do this because then you'll be put in chera. But Yaakov and Rami decide, no, Bishan Lechav Kumecha literally means lying down. That's it. From now, we are cutting out Kriyat Shema from Tevilah B'Tzibur because at night for Mariv, because we paskin like Shammai, that you must be lying down in your bed. And therefore we hereby declare, based on biblical interpretation, that everyone should daven Mariv in their bedroom so that they can say Shema on their bed. This is not, we're not making up anything new. We just think Shammai was right.
No.
No. In fact, the Gemara says where that when Rabbi Tarfon tried it, he nearly got killed, and the rabbi said, good, you should have been killed, right? Because you went, you had the chutzpah to go like Beit Shammai against Beit Hillel, right? But this is exactly the point, right? Why is it that we all take it as a given that the Bavli said that anyone who possibly makes Shammai deserves to die, that's actually what Gemara says, right? And therefore, we would never challenge the Mishnah, the Bavli, never, right? According to Rambam, according to our Gemara, if we have a kasha, right, or we're compelled by an interpretation of the Torah that's different than the Bavli's, we should have to follow it. Correct, that's exactly my point. And yet, how often do you, Eli, decide that I think the pasuk means something different than what the Bavli says? No, but that's exactly what it is. I think the pasuk means something different than what the Bavli ruled it meant. I think Beit Shammai was right. So why can't you do that? No, and B, you're questioning the rabbinic interpretation of Torah. Hillel said, Hillel, you can't question the Torah, but you can question the interpretation, meaning, why is it Hillel Paskins, Kriyat Shema is said in the morning and at night. Means when you go to sleep and when you wake up. Shammai says that you have to say Kriyat Shema standing up and lying down, depending whether it's morning or night. The Bavli Paskins like Hillel against Shammai. And therefore, you can't possibly like Shammai against Hillel, but why not? It's biblical interpretations. That's what I just did.
Right, so then should be totally fine.
That's my question. So that's exactly... Yes, Ellie. What? The question is, if in principle you should be allowed to challenge rabbinic interpretation, whether you're greater than, in number or wisdom or not, so why is it that in practice... nobody in the last 1600 years.
Oh, that's not just biblical interpretation. That's biblical interpretation that came from a census. And
that's the question.
No,
Ellie, that's the question. The question is.
Much more than a single kind of Thai interpretation, a whole entire set, like unanimous
agreement. Thank you. Ellie, you intuitively believe, like the cast of Mishnah, that there's something unique about the Bavli, but To quote our joke from yesterday, right? That might be the answer, but let's save for the question, right? Meaning, Ellie, you're solving the problem. You're saying the Bavli is different. It's not mere interpretation. It's mere interpretation which is bolstered by something, right? But I want you to understand the question, right? You are now saying regular biblical interpretation in a Hanami. You could challenge. But the Bavli represents something more than that. Right? The question is, what is that more? You have an answer, right? And you're not alone in your answer, right? At all. You're not alone in your answer in all. Very big names are behind you, right? But let's understand the problem that they're responding to first.
Right, but the problem is that if they're really allowed to go against
the problem is, why is it that we all take it as a given that we can't go against the totality of Chazal, right? Exactly. That's the problem. Is it the Torah seems to say that you are allowed to, and yet we don't, and we're convinced that we can't.
No, the Torah doesn't say that.
The Gemara itself seems to think you can always challenge someone who's dead. Okay, fine. See, we could get the judges. Even better, the Sanhedrin isn't judges. The Gemara isn't judges. There was no Sanhedrin. Right? It was just rabbis and yeshivas. Right? Yes, Ezra. Ezra has been patient. Go, Ezra.
So, let's say in theory, we rule that...
You've joined the Sanhedrin?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I asked who wanted to be on the Sanhedrin. You didn't raise your hand. Fine.
Well, I said we. I didn't necessarily include me. I said...
Let's just get our facts straight. Are you or are you not on Rami and Yaakov's Sanhedrin?
You know, yeah. I'm on the Sanhedrin, that way I can't be from the
pair. Okay, good. Fine. So Ezra is now, but you were late to the game, so you're third tier here. Fine. But fine. You are the third in command.
You know, I'll get the vote before they do, so it's good, right?
Fine. Yeah, okay, fine. Good.
So let's say if you rule that you are allowed to eat, you don't need to tell them to boil a cactus.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that would get messy, right? Meaning, if their big decree was predicated in a certain... I don't actually know the answer to that question.
Wait, no.
I don't know the answer to that question. No, I understand the problem. Is that, theoretically, you could be in a situation where a rabbinic decree was protecting an interpretation of the Torah, which, if a later Sanhedrin doesn't accept the interpretation of the Torah, the rabbinic decree would be insane, right? I get it, right? Meaning, if... Right? A Sanhedrin would arise that didn't believe that milk and meat was usher, but rather it was just usher to cook a kid in his mother's milk, then the rabbinic decree against chicken and milk would be, right, pointless, because like, so could you get to a situation, one second, in Zachur Li Nachon, I recently saw a Shita who actually argues that that could happen. That you could theoretically be stuck with the rabbinic decrees for formal reasons, even though they no longer make any sense because they were predicated. I'm just like scanning my brain for a second. Where did I see this recently of someone who proposed that as an actual possibility? Was it in what Ray Brody sent me, or was it in the book I'm currently reading? I'm reading a lot right now, so like I'm trying to remember where I saw that sheet.
What do you mean by that? Are you ever not reading a lot?
Yes, I'm reading a lot on this topic right now, so I'm trying to like. Look, I know it's not in the book I'm currently reading about cancer, nor is it about the book that I'm reading about the tyranny of merit. So I'm assuming it's either in the article I was reading about rabbinic authority or in the book I'm reading on rabbinic authority. I'm just trying to remember which one it was. Okay? And I'm also dealing with my chavrusa and shviyat. So now I'm just trying to... It'll come to me which one it was. Fine. Theoretically, yes, Ezra, you could be in such a weird situation. In Hanami? Yes. Fine. So this is the million-dollar question. So the question is, okay, with that background, why is it that this is not true? So, Eli decides that he is the reincarnation of Rabbi Yosef Karo, and he is channeling the spirit of Rabbi Yosef Karo into our classroom. Good, so Eli, represent Rabbi Yosef Karo's answer to this question, since you just said it. You intuitively hold by Rabbi Yosef Karo, good person to represent. What does he say? Remember, just quick reminder, Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of Shulchan Aruch, he wrote several books. He wrote the Beit Yosef, which is his encyclopedic record of all things Torah as a commentary on the Torah. He wrote Shulchan Aruch, which is a summary, but he also wrote Kesef Mishnah, which is his commentary on the Rambam, which I have here. He also wrote, what else did he write? Remember? His record of his Chavrusa with the angel, right? Magid Mesharim. Yes? And his tshuva on Avkan Rochel. Okay, good. So what does Rabbi Yosef Karo think, Eli? Because he thinks like Eli.
That it's much different to go against a huge populace or unanimous agreement
that something that is so true. So Eli, Rabbi Yosef Karo, and several others say the answer is look. The difference is acceptance. There's acceptance. When one Sanhedrin... Right, the Sanhedrin of Moshe Feinstein said something that the Torah meant X, and then Yaakov Sanhedrin says it means Y, so they can do that. But if the position, the interpretation of a Beit Din garners unanimous support of the entire Jewish community, then that interpretation becomes
supreme
because the acceptance of the Jewish people has overarching power. This is, one second, Rami. This is more or less what the Keshe Mishnah says. And he says in number three, the Im Tomar. Right? Once we have the Rambam who says that in theory, any biblical interpretation should always be able to be overturned by someone who understands the Torah differently. Right? And note that this is the Rambam that where the Keshe Mishnah decides to ask this question. And now you understand why. Right? Because if in principle you could always challenge biblical interpretation, so why don't we do that to the Bavli? So he says, Im Tomar. Im Kain Amaylo Kligi Amorai Atanai. Then why didn't the Amoraim argue with the Tanayim? How do I know they never did that? Right? Because the same question about us to the Bavli is the Bavli to the Mishnah. Right? Because every time in the Gemara there's a contradiction with the Bavli, with the Mishnah rather, what does the Gemara say? You went against the Mishnah. What should the Gemara answer?
So what?
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, exactly. And then you could just say, look, when the Gemara says don't rip it up, that's the interpretation of one rabbi. But he says, we always tell an Amora, if you want to defend yourself against the contradiction of Mishnah, what do you need to say? I hold like another Tana. And if not, we say, it's a question. Based on the Rambam, harishut nituna lohem lachlok al divrei tanaim. The Gemara should be able to argue on the Mishnah. We should be able to argue on the Gemara. The Eshar Lomar. So what is the answer? Shemiyom Chatimata Mishnah Kimu Vikiblu. Shedorot Achronim Lo Yachloku Al HaRishonim. The Mishnah, after the Mishnah, we accepted not to challenge the Mishnah. V'chein Asu Gam B'Chatimata Gemara. And after the Gemara, we again accept it to never challenge the Gemara. Shem yom shenechzema, and therefore, since the day that it was sealed, lo nitan reshut adam lachlok aleha. Now, there are variations on this theme. There are variations on this. But fundamentally, the insight of Eli slash the Keshe Mishnah is, the difference is an interpretation merely an interpretation? Or is it an interpretation backed by universal Jewish acceptance? The former can be challenged, the latter cannot. Now, we do have to ask the obvious question, which is...
Was there anyone still following your
Shalmi? Okay, we're going to come back. Let's just bracket the question of Bavli. First, let's say how we get to the Mishnah being binding and the notion of Gemara being binding. The difference between Bavli and Yerushalmi, we'll get there, okay? We'll get there. But for the moment, let's pretend that doesn't exist. Let's pretend. It does. And yet, people didn't accept this for a very long time, right? And people continued following Yerushalmi for much longer than you probably realize, right? Meaning, into this millennium, let's say, there was evidence of such things, right? The great debates of Rastajagon over the calendar where Eretz Yisrael was doing differently than Bavel, right? But let's bracket it for the moment. The Keshe Mishnah said there's a difference. Yes, in principle, later authorities can always challenge the biblical interpretation of earlier authorities. But once the Jewish people agree not to, then they can't. That's it. Agreement. Once they... Oh, very good. So Eli is his own worst enemy. Eli says, oh, acceptance. But that always leaves the problem of... Okay, good. Good. So I'll come to your question in a minute. Before we get to your question, I just want to do one more thing, which is, okay, let's assume that what gives the Bavli, the first the Mishnah and then the Gemara, its power is that it's not just an interpretation. It's an interpretation backed by agreement of the Jewish people. Now, what does that mean? So one way of reading this is that it's like a implicit agreement, meaning there was no like formal vote. It just sort of happened. Sort of happened. Right? Yeah, it just sort of happened. Or you could invent a historical moment in which they actually voted. So if you look at the Smog, for example, in 4, well, maybe you think it did. I don't know. But the Smog, the Sefer Mitzvah Gadol, the Rishon of Baal Tosfos, says in number 4, Rav Ashi haya Rosh Hashiva Galiot Yisrael. Rav Ashi was the Rosh Hashiva. Umimot Rebbe at Rav Ashi Lomatinu Torah Gdulam Makom Echad. Between Rebbe and Rav Ashi, there was never so much Torah and greatness in one place. God helped Rav Ashi, who sealed the Bavli, find favor in the eyes of the Persian king. And he gathered all rabbis in the entire world and established the interpretation of the Mishnah. What do we call the Bavli? V'sidru b'haskama kol chachmei hador. So the Smog is so bothered by this problem that what does the Smog say? It's not just theoretical acceptance. How did the Bavli get its power? A unanimous actual vote by all rabbis on the face of planet Earth.
Is this recorded?
No. There's literally no evidence of such a moment. But what is the Smog trying to solve? Why is the Smog saying such a thing? He is trying to solve Ellie's problem, which is, if it's just acceptance, can't we just unaccept it? So what's the Smog's answer going to be? No. This is not like theoretical acceptance. This was actual acceptance. So maybe in theory, if you pull together a Sanhedrin of every rabbi on the face of planet Earth, and you could get them to agree on something, first of all, that'd be the greatest miracle since Matan Torah, right? Maybe greater. Chaliot, right? Right? I mean, look, if you have looked at the attempt of the Israeli government to pull together a coalition for the last 2 years, you will know that the chances you can get... I mean, it's crazy. To quote Bennett, there is a 80-person majority of right-wingers in the government. And nevertheless, we are on our fourth election in 2 years. They all basically agree on, like, policy issues, and they still can't get together. So if you think you can get every rabbi in the entire world to get together into a room, and or on a Zoom call, I don't care, right, and agree to anything, much less the overturning of the Bavli, gesundheit, right? But the Smog thinks this isn't a theoretical acceptance. This was an actual vote. So Yaakov asked the obvious question, which is, I mean, that's very nice. If it had happened, that would be very nice. We just have no evidence of such a thing ever happening.
The
Bavli, they're not living in Rome.
I know, but I think if you're saying they gathered all the rabbis, they gathered the rabbis outside.
Don't ask me how this happened, right? Now, for this reason, did the Ketzav Mishnah, actually say this? Elliot, to be fair, did the Ketzav Mishnah say this? No, he didn't say this, right? Meaning, both the Ketzav Mishnah and the Smog think that what gave the Mishnah and then later the Gemara its authority is communal acceptance. But the Smog seems to think that there was an actual formal vote, but that's not what the Ketzav Mishnah says. No, it just sort of happened, right? Rav Elchanan says it slightly differently in 5. He says v'tzarach iyun la'avin kabbalah shel Ketzav Mishnah. We need to understand what exactly the Ketzav Mishnah is talking about, right? What is this this acceptance? Zumativa. What is the nature of such an acceptance? Ubamako chayafet. Why does it have such power? Shaloyi efshar lachlo gamal kabbalah zot batma. Right? Rav Elchanan asked exactly this question, which is, okay, leave the smog aside. Let's take the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah just says, we accepted it. Like, we, the royal we accepted it. So so Rav Elchanan asked the obvious question, which is, and if we don't, no. Okay. The Kesef Mishnah, I think, is descriptively true. We do accept it. Meaning, that is true. That I think, descriptively is true. Right? No one, maybe until the reform movement, let's say. But let's say Rabbinic Judaism from Chatzimah HaTalmud till the reform movement ever challenged the authority of the Babli. Let's say that, okay? I don't know if that's fully true, but let's say that for now. So, okay. So then Rav Elchanan says, but okay, that, what's the problem? What if we just don't? What if we say, but we don't accept it? I protest, right? So he says, why aren't we allowed to live chok gamal kabbalah zot v'atma? Kemo shayef shar lach chok alot hamud below kabbalah zot. Right, that according to the Kesef Mishnah, if it weren't for communal acceptance, then what? You could have challenged the Babli. So why don't we just say, we don't accept the acceptance, and since we don't accept the acceptance, we can challenge the Babli, right? I mean, isn't that the logic here? Right? That's the problem.
Could be wrong, but it appears to say that, like, because there was this big acceptance, because it would be certainly trying to argue that, like, oh, like, that there's just this acceptance that we could turn on and off. Because obviously...
Okay, but why? Why not?
Because if you could just disagree with it, then, like, I mean, it would happen that then you...
You're trying to get, I see what you're trying to do, but this is a problem. I really hope by the end of this I haven't, like, shaken all your amuna, but fine, right? No, I'm just asking the hard questions here, okay? That's what Elchanan's asking. He said, what is the nature of this acceptance such that this is not true? That's his question, right? That's exactly what he's asking. Alafiel now, Kushin against the Mishnah Lokasha. He says, however, you could just say, the Chatimara Mishnaya Gamim Kibbutz Kochach Mishal Ruban, Asher Lahena Koch Shal Beit Din Agadol, Vasur Lashumadam Lachlokalehen, Biltim Yesh Gam Lachoket Koch Shal Beit Din Agadol. He said, aha, it must be, but if you understand something like the Smog, that there's an actual vote, right, or something, an acceptance, so then, if you got Gamkin Khachme Israel or Rubana Shalana Koshal Baitin Agadol, Vasrula Shadam Lachlokal and Bilti, it means Gamla Khogin Koshal Baitin Agadol. You also would need the authority, right? He says maybe what this is getting at is that the acceptance gives it, as it were, the power of Sanhedrin Agadol. In order for you to argue, you need to get all the rabbis together to recreate that power. They have Shah Rashad Khatiman al Tamud, Hayalan Kohlo Gamala Mishnah. Maybe in theory the Babli could have argued in the Mishnah. But there was no gathering of such rabbis later. Okay? Now, so Kundras de Reson from Rav Elchanan basically goes in the more formal direction, right? That there must have been an actual vote, and therefore what you need is a real vote to undo that vote, right? However, if you look at how he quotes it in Kovet Shurim on Bava Batra, he quotes Rav Chaim, as Rav Chaim Brisker, Salvechik, right? Dover Zesham Alti, mi Mori Virabi, Agon Rav Chaim Alevi, Zesalmi Brisk. I asked my Rebbe, Rav Chaim, Veishiv. And he said, did the emet in truth? Gamal or yesh b'kocho lachlok al tana. And Amara really could argue on Avtana. And Amara can argue on Avtana, so what is all this mess that we have in the Gemara where they say, how could you have said that? It goes against the Mishnah. What should the answer always be? Yeah, and who cares? So I argued on a Mishnah. What do you want from my life? I'm allowed to, right? Why don't we do that? V'had was vidin tiyufta mitanai lamorai, hu mishum damora ina chola galdana. He said the answer is, because amoraim don't. Not they can't, they don't. That's it. Well, look, he said, v'ilu yada diraytana loya chola galab. The amoraim, if they knew of what the Tana said, they just wouldn't have argued. Aval, and it, now, but Reb Chaim never says. Reb Chaim rejects all this. He says, no. You know why the Mishnah is binding on the Amoraim? Because they chose never to argue.
That's really not an answer.
Yeah, well, watch his next line. It's even more radical. Watch his next words. He says, Aval b'makom shecholik lehedya. Therefore, if it's not like some super acceptance, like we've got a Sanhedrin together, just they chose not to, so then... Let's say an Amora would say, I know what the Mishnah says, and I argue. What would the halacha be? Extra halacha about that. Then you could follow the Amora against the Mishnah. Meaning, it's only they accepted it when they accepted it, and when they didn't accept it, they didn't. And therefore, if an Amora says, I think this, and he didn't know that the Mishnah went against him, so we reject the Amora. Why? Because he didn't mean to argue on the Mishnah. But let's say an Amora would have come along and said, no, I know exactly what all the Tanaim said, and I don't really care very much. So then what would we do? Could accept the Gemara. Because it's about acceptance. If you accept it, you accept it. You don't. You don't. V'nire muchach gen, I'll prove to you. Shenimsa v'gemara v'kama v'kamot sh'amru ha-moraim al-mishnah. Doing a Mishnah, I'll prove it to you. Because sometimes what do the Amoraim do? What are they going to say? What is he saying? Rami, he says sometimes the Gemara actually does reject the Mishnah. V'chidush gadol nimsa v'chidushei
haramban. Isn't that because, like, they don't, like, one second.
He said he found the following chiddush in the Ramban and Bava Basra later on, like, on our daf, on Kuf Lamed Aleph. Daha demot vina tiyufta mitana le'amora, that which we ask as a contradiction between a tana and amora, who rock and divrei tana nishnah b'mishnah b'braita. It's only the words of the Tanaim that were recorded in the Mishnah or the Braitot. Aval amhein b'lashon memra, but if it's just some other Tanaitic material that's floating around that never got codified, asher l'chokol divrei tana, then you could argue why. Because there's nothing stopping Namora from arguing on a Tana except that they accepted it. But they only accepted not to argue on the codified material of Tanaim. And the non-codified material? They never accepted it. And therefore, V'chein Kadav, Shem Mishid, V'chein Rabbi Yona, V'avol Bishad Din Derech Hamoran Lachol Gol Tanaim, even though they don't normally do it, Hani Mivadar Shesimo, the Mishnah of a Braita, that's only a Mishnah or a Braita, but if it wasn't there, so they do. Right? So you have all these people who go... Much more. What?
I mean, okay, so, like, if the Reformed Jews...
Wait! Don't start jumping to that yet. Wait, we're going to get... We're getting there. Rami, we're getting there. Please, don't let this shake your emunah until we finish, okay? Until we finish. Wait. Okay? Now, by the way... I know this is jumping a little bit to the Yerushalmi, right? The question of Yerushalmi, but look at the Riff for a second, right? The Riff, right? The Riff also seems to think it's about acceptance, but watch what he says. The Riff is dealing with the question, why do we follow the Bavli or the Yerushalmi? What's his answer? What do you think his answer is going to be? No, he just says, look, Anan lo sir lan achi, we don't hold this way. The chaim just like the gemara dilan lehetira lo echbat lan mamai dasri be gemara de benim arava. The Bavli is nekel, the Yerushalmi is machmer, so we don't care about the Yerushalmi. Why not? Dal gemara dilan samchinan, because we rely on ours. Why? The batrininu, because it's later. Meaning, what's his answer?
We just don't want to have to deal with the.
I mean, we right. The riff also sounds like, when did we accept the Bavli? I don't know, we do. Like, what do you want from my life? We do. Right? Now, okay. Mm. So far, what we've seen the smog who takes acceptance, because he wants to deal with Elliot's problem, which is, if we accept it, why don't we unaccept it? And his answer is, it was a formal acceptance. They got together, repented for the Gansa Oilam, right? And unless you can pull off that miracle, you can never challenge it. The problem is...
Have you seen that already, like, comments where the negatives
of
concept
and
the
Gansa
Oilam
is
too
much to the people? Okay, fine. Right? But the... Kesef Mishnah in one way, and the Rif slightly differently, and Rav Elchanan quoting Rav Chaim, right? They all seem to be more like, no, why did the Gemara accept the Bavli? Why did the Gemara accept the Mishnah, rather?
Because
they did. And why do we accept the Gemara?
Because we do.
Because we do. So now, before we get into the obvious question, which is, well, if you're not going to be uber formal about it, then what if we don't? Let me first shatter your emunah just a little bit more. I hate doing this to you, and I love doing it all the same time. I have great... Wait! Watch the following statement from the Melamed Lahoil, and then I'm going to show you even more shocking from the Meiri. So, the Melamed Lahoil is who? Rudolf Zvi Hoffman, right? So, 19th century Germany. He quotes, he says, Reb Chaim said that we accepted. Rather, the Mishnah accepted the Gemara. The Gemara accepted the Mishnah, right? He quotes the Gra as saying, I mean, usually, but not always. So look at 7. He says, hey, Yodea, you should know that Kol Chisuri Mechzer Hashem Mitalmud, every time the Gemara says, there are missing words in the Mishnah, the law chaser klal v'seder shesider. How did you always understand that? Chisuri mechzera. We found a new manuscript, right? This, he says, no, that's not what it means. The law chaser klal v'seder shesider abeinu akadosh hamed nizim. It doesn't mean that they found a new girsa and they're correcting the text. What does it mean? La v'rucha shechiser davar. Rak the rebbe sirele dechad tana da li beis dama. V'lo chaser klal li beis. He quotes from the Gra, who says that that's not what it means. It means that Rebbe paskened X, and therefore left the Shita out. But we found a different Tanaitic Shita, okay? And we think Rebbe should have included that Shita, and we're paskening like it. Okay? Now that's a little bit radical, but not that radical. Meaning, well, what's the Gras saying?
Basically, the Gemara is okay, so it's all loosely that the Elohim,
what? So, but very, in a very narrow circumstance, right? Meaning, the Gras is saying that sometimes when it says, sorry, Mechzera, what it means is not that the Mishnah, we found different gears. It's that Rebbe left out another Tanaitic Shita, we're possibly like it. So this is very narrow, right? Yeah, it's relatively narrow. It's saying, right? And Rav David Hoffman says it's not all Chisuri Mechzera. Sometimes it probably is a gears of change, right? That's not so radical. You with me? It's not so radical. Because all that's saying is what? That sometimes the Mishnah isn't binding, but the Tanaim still were, right? Let me shake your emunah just a little bit more, right? And let me read you a mi'iri. Where did I put this mi'iri? One second. Why did I? Did I not? I definitely put it on the sheet. But, oh, here we go. Sorry. I don't know. I added something. I guess I did this in a weird order. Look at number 14. Okay? Probably better. You didn't get to it, so I get to read it to you and watch your faces. Right? Watch the mi'iri. The Meiri says, "V'im kol zeh nitzmatu alot levavot mirabat tzar v'zuchachon l'chaverach rav derech beir v'archava." He said, right, later on, after the Mishnah, people were, you know, there was troubles and travail, so they had to write the Gemara. And what did they do in the Gemara? They had to explain the Mishnah. So far, anything controversial? Okay, good. I just want to watch your faces. I read the next words. Fine. I want to watch your faces. I need to enjoy this. Lifam, how did the Gemara explain the Mishnah? Lifamim, derech tira v'tikun, sometimes by destroying it and fixing it. Kishahayu chach me'ador mastimim lekach mimah sheroim ma kushya chazakam k'mo shavru. Sometimes they just tore down the Mishnah when they decided that it was, they had a question against it. And he says, do you know when they did that? Every time one of the following phrases appears in the Bavli, what it means is that they are not finding a new Tana. What are they doing? Rejecting the Mishnah. The following phrases, Matnizan Yechida Ahi, when they say that Mishnah is a Shitat Yachid, that's not so controversial, because they're right, but Sami Mikan, what is Sami Mikan? No, eliminate from here. According to Miri, that doesn't mean this is a Gerson mistake. It means the Amoraim are saying, that Mishnah is wrong, let's get rid of it. Right? Ain't a Mishnah. When they say it's not a Mishnah, they don't mean it's a wrong Gerson. What do they mean? It shouldn't be a Mishnah. Chisure Mechzera doesn't mean there's a missing text. What does it mean?
There should be a missing text.
And then, if it weren't clear what he wanted from your life, he then, here's his Makom HaPatish. She'ein hashleimut nimtza b'nivraim. Because perfection is not found amongst any human being, af b'muvcharim shelahem. Even the best of them, ad shel yu achronim rasha in lachlokim and mitzvah dvarim. It is impossible for anyone to be so perfect that you can't argue on them, and therefore, the Mishnah, we've all been working under the assumption that the Gemara always followed some sheet in the Tanaim. And the Miri says, yeah, except every time it tells you, it does not, because nobody is perfect. And therefore, the Mishnah, the Gemara, how often did it accept the Mishnah? Every time it didn't say that it didn't. Right? It usually liked what the Mishnah said. And when it didn't, so what does the Miri say they did? He just didn't accept it. That's all. Now you'll ask me, wait a second. Now the Miri doesn't then ask the next question, which is, and what if we feel that way as a Bavli? He doesn't ask that question. Well, see, the Miri doesn't ask the next question, which is,
what if you do this to the Gemara?
The Miri doesn't touch that question. But you understand that if you think this is about acceptance, right, and you don't think there was like a formal Sanhedrin the way the Smag does, this, at some level, is the obvious next step, right? And what I'll leave you with is a question from the Chazon Ish, and then we will continue tomorrow. The Chazon Ish, therefore, turn for a second to number 10, okay? The Chazon Ish has a letter to Reb Elchanan, right? On his shita of rabbinic power, and he says the following, number 10. He says very simply, he quotes Rav Elchanan, who says, "Katav da'atam she'namura lachlok ala mishnah mishum she'eskimu barov chachmei Yisrael." Rav Elchanan says the reason that the Gemara didn't argue on the Bavli is the Gemara didn't argue on the Mishnah is they accepted it. V'chein b'Gemara b'zman Rabina, why don't we argue on the Gemara? We accepted it, right? And he says, according to that, what should follow? If all rabbis nowadays would get together, what should happen? Then you should argue on the Gemara. And then the Chazon Ish tells you, in three words, what he thinks of this whole derech. Hadvarim asur lishom'an. Such words are forbidden to hear. Right? This is impossible. But does it in many ways naturally flow from the whole acceptance theory? Yes. Tomorrow we will continue, but I just want you to, before we can, I just want to show you that on the next page I gave you Rav Elchanan's letter back to the Chazon Ish, and he says as follows. He quotes the Chazon Ish, who says, "V'shem kundrus yevei sovrim zal v'gam achshav imi kavdu kol chach meyisrael yuchlu lachlo gal gemara v'adavarim asur l'shoman." Bivadai kenhu. Rav Elchanan says, you're right. It is forbidden to say that. But I look back at my book and I don't know when I said such a thing. Right? So what exactly did you say then? Right? Because the logical conclusion of the acceptance theory is that if you choose not to accept it, good. So what we're going to see tomorrow is, first we're going to see Rabbi Elchanan's defense, right, where Rabbi Elchanan introduces a second factor, right, which is even if it's about acceptance, there's a second factor you have to contend with. We're going to see that Chazon Ish is so bothered by this whole thing that what's he going to do? He's going to say this has nothing to do with acceptance, you crazy people. That's dangerous, right? And then we're going to see something which is in many ways even more radical from Shmuel David Glasner, the Doravi, who's going to say, why exactly do you think the Bavli is always going to be binding? It's not. He just says, no, it won't always be. Right now he admits that it is, but he's totally fine with going next and saying, I mean, for now we do, but we won't always. Right? I feel terrible. I'm like shattering all of your bases. What? Well, you'll see. The Chazon Ish is going to have a whole different solution to this, but we'll do it tomorrow, okay?